The Northwestern University Reviewing Stand.
Just what is democracy?
The ideal democracy is a state in which each individual person has the greatest personal freedom and economic opportunity consistent with an ordered society.
Democracy is a total way of life in which all members of a society have full opportunity to develop their interests to the extent of their abilities.
Democracy is government in which the supreme power is vested in the people and exercised by them through their elected representatives. We started with that, but we did not have democracy. We had only a republican form of government.
Northwestern University, in cooperation with the Mutual Broadcasting System, presents The Reviewing Stand, a program in its 14th year on the air. Today, The Reviewing Stand asks, just what is democracy? Our give-and-take discussion will center around American democracy, its freedoms, and its responsibilities. At the end of the program, we'll tell you how to get a printed copy of today's discussion. And now, our moderator, Robert Buchanan, director of The Reviewing Stand, will introduce participants in today's discussion. Mr. Buchanan.
Response to our recent program, Just What is Communism?, continues to be so great that The Reviewing Stand has decided to present a series of discussions about forms of government. Today, we turn to the question, just what is democracy? Here to take a critical look at democracy, and especially American democracy, are Malcolm Dole, professor of chemistry, Melville J. Herskovitz, author of The Myth of the Negro Past and chairman of the Department of Anthropology, and Kenneth E. Olson, dean of the Medill School of Journalism, all of Northwestern University. In thinking of democracy, I noticed, Dole, that you mentioned ideal democracy. Do you suggest that the democracy we have in the United States today, then, has not reached the best standards of this form of government?
I don't think anybody would say that it's perfect. For example, I consider the recent attack on my friend, Dr. E.U. Condon, the director of the National Bureau of Standards, by the House Un-American Activities Committee, in which he has been accused without opportunity to refute the charges, I consider that a decidedly undemocratic and indefensible procedure.
You think, then, that we have perhaps a long way to go to reach the ideal to which you refer?
Yes, sir.
Well, when you say that democracy is a total way of life, Herskovitz, do you think, along with Dole, that we have not achieved this democracy?
Well, I think we've gone probably farther toward it than any other people that I know of in recent historical times. A person who belonged to one of the minority groups, Negro, for example, or those who are economic underprivileged might take issue with the definition of democracy as something that is operative here and now. But nonetheless, there are these positive factors, and there is no question that we are working toward a situation in which we will have more and more democracy rather than less. Human institutions are not perfect, and probably never will be, because there is a dynamic of history that makes things change continuously, and we always strive for new ideals when we reach the old one. Nonetheless, I think that we have plenty of work to do before we reach the kind of an ideal that we are setting up in terms of what Dole has said and what I have said in defining democracy.
Well, I'm interested in this historical concept you speak about. Olson, for instance, you seem to indicate that historically our government was not planned as a democracy, and at least as we've defined it here. What were the actual ideas of our founding fathers?
Well, as Herskovitz has suggested, this democracy is something we've grown into. Most of the founders of our republic wanted freedom from the established order in England. Kings and lords and established church and a peasantry that never could own any land. And though they proudly declaimed in the Declaration of Independence that all men were created free and equal, they simply meant that they, as persons, felt they were as good as any king or lord, but they didn't for a minute think that all men in the colonies were as good as they were. It's curious, but the word democracy is not mentioned once, either in the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution. The first leaders of our country were afraid of democracy. Alexander Hamilton spoke of the people as the great beast. Even Jefferson distrusted what he called the mobs in the cities.
Well, Olson, isn't that because of the fact that they were reacting as men of quality and men of substance to the current reactions to the French Revolution of that time? After all, you had the mobs in the cities, who had destroyed the Bastille, who had overthrown the monarchy, and Don't forget that that was one of the reasons why it was universally agreed that the capital of our nation should not be at Philadelphia, where the city mobs could get there, but in a new city, and that's the reason Washington was set.
Well, that's very true. The Federalist Party, which ran our government during the Washington John Adams administration, represented the aristocrats and the wealthy landowners, the shipping and financial interests.
Yes, you should remember that the good people of Massachusetts and Connecticut in the year 1790 looked with suspicion and scorn on people who corresponded and had contact with the French revolutionaries in much the same way that we look on people in this country now that have traffic with the communists, with the Russians.
Yes, Jefferson was considered a radical in his day.
Well, he was considered a radical, I feel, because what he did was to pick up certain aspects of the French Revolution, revolutionary ideology that expressed itself in the French slogan of liberty, equality, and fraternity, which was not congenial to propertied people all over the world. And I think that there we have something that gives us a clue to an understanding of why there was the feeling for republicanism rather than for democracy on the part of all of the early founders.
That's very true, because these property people who ran our government to begin with were very anxious to preserve what they had. We must remember there were many men in our republic when it was first born who were not free. We had slaves in the South. In the North, we had bonded slaves or indentured servants by hundreds of thousands. To have a right to vote in most of our early states, a man had to own property worth at least 50 pounds, and he could not run for governor unless he owned property worth at least 1,000 pounds.
Dean Olson, do you believe now that all people who pay income taxes should have the right to vote? I think particularly of my young daughter, Priscilla, who is 18 years old and is very ambitious. She's working this summer, and she has to pay an income tax on her salaries, but she doesn't have the right to vote, and she thinks that that's an injustice. She wants the right to vote.
Or even the boys who may have to serve under the draft or in the war at the age of 18 and can't vote.
Well, of course, we heard a great deal of that during the war itself.
And when the veterans got back out of service, they felt they'd fought for our country, and they ought to have the right to vote when they got back.
Well, there's quite a movement, isn't there, Dole, among the younger people to actually extend the franchise down to people who are 18.
I think the AVA is working on that, the American Veterans Committee, the AVC, I mean.
Well, certainly that wasn't true historically, though, as we were developing. What came about so that these indentured servants and so forth, and how about women, Dean Olson, when did they come around to voting?
Well, actually, it wasn't until 1850 that these property restrictions were removed for voting so that all male white citizens at least could vote. But it wasn't until 1920 that women citizens of the United States were given the right to vote.
We still have certain property qualifications, haven't we? Poll tax, for example,
people that can't raise.
What about the concept of democracy as opposed to the republic? When was that first born in our country, if it wasn't with the Declaration of Independence?
Well, it really wasn't until along about the 1850s that Jackson first enunciated democracy as a policy of his party. Before that, we'd shied away from this dangerous word, democracy. We spoke of republicanism, but not democracy.
Well, isn't it true, Olson, that the concept of democracy was emphasized much more in France than it was in the United States, as against republicanism?
Yes, in 1832, a young French nobleman, a young fellow, visited America to study our penal institutions and also to study our government.
And who was that?
That was Alexis de Tocqueville. On returning to France, he published in 1835 a book called Democracy in America. It's a very interesting book, and in it he says the following, a one-shot quotation which I'd like to make. He says, democracy constantly eludes all human interference, and all events as well as all men contribute to its progress. Would it be wise to imagine that a social movement, the causes of which be so far back, can be checked by the efforts of one generation? Can it be believed that the democracy which has overthrown the feudal system and vanquished kings will retreat before tradesmen and capitalists? Will it stop now that it has grown so strong and its adversaries so weak? Do you think, Olson, that democracy has retreated before tradesmen and capitalists?
No, I think on the contrary, democracy has advanced. We have won new freedoms as we have developed.
Did that come in the Industrial Revolution?
Yeah, it began even before that.
Well, I think it's interesting to go back to the French Revolution and some of the ideas that gave rise to these concepts of liberty, fraternity, and equality. After all, we have to remember that behind the French Revolution are such theories as those of Rousseau and his fellows, who felt that government was bad. That's been translated with us in the economic sphere, laissez-faire. But you had political laissez-faire, too. The idea that in the beginning, there was natural man, there wasn't any government, and then they formed a social contract, and that brought government into being, and government has imposed itself mm-hmm. on peoples.
Well, would he assume then, Herskovitz, that we should have anarchy?
No. People just lived in a state of nature in the early days. Of course, there weren't any such people. There never have been. But Rousseau read the reports of missionaries, particularly, and others, who traveled in America and the Caribbean and the South Seas, where you had small groups who lived in what looked like a state of nature. Now, one of my English anthropological colleagues, Sir John Myers, in writing on the influence of anthropology on political science, wonders what would have happened if Rousseau and some of his fellows had looked at some of the African material where you had monarchies and autocracies and so on. There isn't any such thing as natural man. But we've got to recognize that that is the theory out of which the French idea of mm-hmm. liberty and equality and fraternity, as against the Republican ideal that developed in the United States and later gave way to the Jacksonian democracy, came from.
What impact did the Industrial Revolution, the economic concept, have on both these ideas?
Let's go back first to this French principles. Now, Jefferson did applaud those. He believed in the rights of man. But he, representing the agrarian party in the United States, made up of all the small independent farmers and freeholders who made up the great bulk of our country, he was more interested in political democracy, because there was no question these farmers were independent and free and more or less self-sufficient. He saw no danger there. But he was more interested in political democracy.
Well, Olson, that's been a current in our history. Look at the various parties, the Populist Party, for instance, that have tried to recover for the small landowner their position in our democracy.
Well, that's been part of our historic development. Now, however, that concept in the Jeffersonian day, when we were a nation of small farmers, that was no longer good enough when after the Industrial Revolution. Before that time, we'd had an abundance of free land in the West, very easy to get and develop. Even indentured servants could hope to go West and get lands for themselves. But now, after the Industrial Revolution, we had millions of our workers wholly dependent upon wages for subsistence and upon fluctuations of the market for employment. The vast majority of these people were destined to remain as wage workers the rest of their lives, subject to the vicissitudes of panics and depressions which affect machine industries. Well, then we saw labor beginning to organize, and that movement has grown till today. Labor has power almost equal with management. I think that while we may not have a perfect economic or social democracy, as yet we certainly have come a long way from the concepts of freedom which maintained when our republic was born.
Well, moving to conception of today then, historically I suppose all these things have developed, but what would the man on the street say? For instance, Olson, if we were to go out on the street and ask a man, what do you mean by democracy? What do you think he'd say today?
Well, I can best answer that, I think, by saying what does it not mean in contrast to Russia. In this country, a man has a right to take any job he wants. He doesn't have to take what the state says he must work at. He can earn money. He can save money. He has a right to put that money in a home of his own or put it into a business of his own.
Provided he can get it.
Well, that's true. But there's plenty of economic opportunity in this country now. He has a right to vote and express his desires for government. He has a right to worship as he pleases. He has a right to speak and write as he pleases, which is not true in the so-called democracy in Russia.
Does this fit into your conception of democracy as a total way of life, Herskovitz?
Well, in somewhat ideally stated by Olson, I think that it would. After all, I think we have to recognize that democracy, which we tend to underscore as a political mechanism, has many facets. Three of the most important are these. There's the political one that we think of in terms of a form of government in which everybody participates, and which actually is the definition that Olson gave. But then there's economic democracy that we had to talk about when we were discussing the early rise of the concept of democracy in our own culture. And there is, in addition, social democracy that is exceedingly important, where you get class stratification, which we have in this country not in terms of a titled class, a class structure where there are persons who hold their position by reason of birth and inheritance of title, but rather that is based on control of economic resources.
You mean like the blue bloods or the 400 who get into society mainly through economic means?
Well, I'm thinking rather of not of that particular thing, which is a sense of mask for the economic, but the economic reality. That is, the people in the economic sphere, those hold power who control the resources.
What does a scientist think of democracy, Dole? Does that bring you a different conception?
Well, the scientists, as a whole, I would say, would like to see more of the scientific freedom to speak and to publish, more of the equal scientific opportunity which exists today, and more of the scientific cooperation both between scientists in this country and abroad. They would like to see this be transferred or spread to the realm of political democracy. I think that the scientific democracy is perhaps the ideal, because in science, it doesn't do a person any good how much money he is born with or under what stratum of society he is born. When it comes to learning scientific facts and theories and working scientific experiments, he's on a par with everybody else. I remember reading recently an article in the Proceedings of the Royal Society of London by Lord Rothschild on the temperature coefficient of the Calomel electrode. Now, this was a very good scientific paper, but it was no better than anybody else could have written or published. The point there is that the noble birth of Lord Rothschild didn't do him any good when it came to doing a scientific experiment.
No, but wouldn't you say, Dole, that the economic resources that he commanded gave him the leisure to do his scientific work that would be denied, let me say, a person who came from an economically underprivileged family?
Not if a person is bright, because we have in this country all kinds of scientific scholarships. We have university positions where a person can teach part of the time and do research the other part of the time, so that if a man really does have the ability, the time for him to do research will be given to him. I think particularly of Vincent Schaefer, who has recently made those extraordinary experiments on the production of rain at the General Electric Company. Here was a person who had only 2 years of high school education, yet he went to work in the General Electric Company just as a laboratory assistant, just to clean up the floors and so on. But he became so interested in the work going on that he began to construct apparatus on the side, and Dr. Langmuir, one of the associate directors of the laboratory, was so impressed with his ability that he took him in as his assistant, and he's now doing this important scientific work, although he only had 2 years of high school education.
Well, there's no question that there's a greater degree of democracy in science than in any other segment, but you wouldn't deny the fact that the preservation and the development of that democracy in science is only possible insofar as you have the preservation and development of democracy in the general community.
Oh, of course, absolutely.
We seem to be revolving around these three concepts, the political, the economic, and the social. If we can divide them, let's take the political first. I'm interested especially in the fact that we talk about our nation as a democracy, while actually, I suppose, politically, it's a republic. Do you see a difference between those two, Olson?
Yes, indeed. It's maintained from the beginning. I'm interested in this political democracy because, while theoretically we have it in this country, yet actually often it does not operate. When only from 50 to 60% of our eligible voters will vote in a national election, maybe only 25 or 30% in a state or local election,
half the time
then democracy does not operate.
Half the time the voters don't know whom they're voting for.
Well, but isn't that merely to say that every human institution has its obligations as well as its rights, and that the struggle for democracy is essentially a struggle to get participation of the largest number of people. To the extent that people don't participate, you can't have a democracy.
You have to work at democracy.
You have to work at democracy like you have to work at everything that's worth anything. Well, what about this difference between a republic and a democracy? It seems to me it's been coming in again and again in our discussion, and I think it's pertinent at the time. For example, I was very interested in listening to the broadcasts of the Republican National Convention at how few times the word democracy was mentioned. It almost wasn't mentioned at all. Everybody talked about the republic.
Isn't that like radio broadcasts advertising Camel cigarettes when the use of the word lucky is prohibited?
Well, it might go beyond that.
I suspect there's something more than that to it.
What in the matter of civil liberties? We hear a great deal of talk about that today. Politically, are our civil liberties up to what they should be in a real democracy, Herskovitz?
Well, I think we only have to look about us to realize that they aren't. There's the point that Dole brought up. There's the situation of the Negroes in the South. You can't vote. One of our colleagues of a few years back, Marshall Dimmock, in his book, An American Government in Action, has put it very well, it seems to me. The strength or weakness of any form of government, he says, may be tested in two ways: its efficiency in getting necessary things done, and its contribution to the general improvement of the citizens as self-respecting individuals. Now, of course, there's the fact that administration gets things done, and the degree to which administration can be tied up with responsibility of the people who are administered is the great problem of democracy as I see it, because where you've got an irresponsible government, it can be extremely efficient. We saw that among the
Hitlerism,
the fascist regime in Italy. Remember how the fascists made people keep their feet off the seats of trains? One of their great achievements. Well, you can do that.
How did they accomplish that great effort?
Police. But in this country, you have to put on a whole campaign of education to get a thing like that done. Well, it's the balancing of this business of efficiency as against fulfilling a way of life.
What about the social structure, then? Do we have classes in America, even though they aren't so delineated? What do you think, Dole?
Well, I think that one of the very great characteristic of the American scene is the spirit of independence shown by the young people here. We see that, of course, in gangs and juvenile delinquency, perhaps, but there is this independence of spirit that...
You mean you're independent of spirit if you belong to a gang?
No, not entirely, but anyway, I remember once when I was a young college student taking a job as a coal passer on a British freighter. I signed on at Baltimore, and we sailed first to Quebec. I shoveled coal 6 hours on and 6 hours off throughout the 24. That gives us an 84-hour week, incidentally. But when we got to Quebec, and before sailing across the Atlantic to Rotterdam, I thought that it'd be better if I could improve my situation, the old American ambition, so to speak. So I went to the steward and asked him if I could be an apprentice. It seems that this ship had positions for three apprentices, and they only had one, and I thought, well, here's a good opportunity to get up on top on the top sides instead of working down below in the back of the boilers. Well, the steward just looked at me, his eyes opened up, and he said, my heavens, he said, don't you know that to be an apprentice, you have to come from the right families, you have to apply for this position years in advance. In other words, I didn't come from the right society.
Well, you wouldn't say that's unique family to Britain, would you?
Well, isn't that a characteristic of our American democracy? We may have classes, social and economic, and yet there's the opportunity here for anyone to rise out of this class and
might I amend that, Olson? I think that there is the ideal of equality of opportunity. We certainly haven't realized it, and I don't think we ought to kid ourselves that we have. After all, you just have to look about you to realize that, for instance, a person with a heavily pigmented skin just doesn't have the opportunity that a person with less pigment has.
We're probably talking about social equality for whites rather than the...
I think more important than the discussion is what is democracy, is what are the trends in this country? What is democracy going to? What can we expect in the future?
What do you think about that, Herskovitz? Do you see any special trend?
Well, I think, again, you can't talk about democracy as a single phenomenon. I think that we have attained a pretty high degree of political democracy, in the sense that the vast proportion of those in this country who, under the Constitution, as interpreted in its broadest sense, would be eligible to vote, can vote. And I think there's a fairly high degree of political self-consciousness, in spite of what Olson says about the reluctance to vote. Nonetheless, there's a great deal of interest. In the terms of social democracy, I think we don't go as far, but we've done better than a lot of countries. I think in the field of economic democracy, we've got a very long way to go because of the fact of control of resources and ways in which to get a living.
Do you believe with Saint-Simon, who wrote in the 19th century, that the laws which constitute the powers of government are less important and have less influence on the happiness of nations than the laws which constitute property and decide use?
Olson, what do you think of that?
Well, that was the philosophy of that day. I think we've gone a long way. We're no means perfect yet. But I think there's a growing awareness in our society of the rights of the common man and the desire to maintain these civil liberties which we have set up as an ideal.
I agree with you entirely.
We're working toward it.
It seems to me that the job we have to do in implementing democracy is, in a sense, to get behind that trend with all its legal sanctions and push it. That's essentially our job. We don't have to go against the current in doing it. There are individuals and groups who would stem that current, as we all know. Nonetheless, it seems to me that people who are for democracy have something that they can get behind and that they can push.
Well, I assume that democracy is not perfect as in anything else and that we're working toward the end. I think that's your view, isn't it, Olson?
It's been an evolution through our entire history.
I think we should all remember that the Constitution of the United States begins with the extremely significant words, in my opinion, "We the people of the United States."
In other words, it's all-inclusive, and we must work toward the end that's best for all of them.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps we would have better government, too, if instead of speaking of they, referring to the people in Washington, we would speak of we, who are the government.
In other words, we ought, as so many people say, go back to the Constitution.
That's right.
Well, really, it wouldn't be going back, I assume, from this historical development leading toward democracy. But I agree, gentlemen, with your statements that we should examine our government thoroughly and know more about this republic in which we live and the democracy which we talk about so freely. All of us, I think, have a tendency to decry the other forms of government, both those allied to democracy and those antithetical to democracy, without a complete knowledge of our own government. There's certainly no better time than right now to look forward to improvement of this nation and its democracy.
Thank you, gentlemen. You have been listening to the Northwestern University Reviewing Stand discussion, Just What is Democracy? The second in our series on forms of government. The first was Just What is Communism? If you wish to follow this popular series, you can get printed copies with a list of books and articles about the subject discussed for 10 cents each, or the complete Reviewing Stand series, $1 for the next 4 months, $2.50 for an entire year. Why not keep up with our timely discussions each week by sending for your copies now? Write to The Reviewing Stand, Northwestern University, Evanston, Illinois. The address again, The Reviewing Stand, Northwestern University, Evanston, Illinois. Our guests today were Malcolm Dole, Professor of Chemistry, Melville J. Herskovitz, Chairman of the Department of Anthropology, and Kenneth E. Olson, Dean of the Medill School of Journalism, all of Northwestern University. Now our moderator, Robert Buchanan, Director of The Reviewing Stand, we'll tell you about next week's program.
Next week, the Reviewing Stand turns to something new in its informal discussions. Thinking of the important part youth will play in our world of tomorrow, we ask, what do our teenagers think of America's future? Our guests will be two high school girls and two high school boys, each from a different section of the country. They will tell us what problems youth thinks are important and just what the teenager intends to do about them. We invite you to listen next week for this new trend in informal discussions about high school people and their problems. What do our teenagers think of America's future?
The Northwestern University Reviewing Stand is broadcast coast to coast every week as a public service feature of the Mutual Broadcasting System.